Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 4th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Fumi Matsumoto and Jane Terry about their art show, Pathways, opening it with a reception tomorrow at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Tasha Whalen and Lincoln Ferenby will be here to talk about being selected as this month's featured artist at the Juneau Artist Gallery. We'll talk with Mitch Wiley about his new solo show, The Ruby Room, this month. And we'll get news and views about local art during Arts Up with guest Nancy DeCherney. That's today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, showers becoming scattered in the evening with low temperatures around 51 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies predicted for Friday with a chance of showers and high temperatures around 59 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies and a chance of rain predicted for Saturday with high temperatures around 58 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota is trying to put into trust status about 61 acres of land it owns near Bear Butte, about 200 miles from the Rosebud Reservation. As a first step, the Department of Interior notified the City of Sturgis, Meade County, and the local school board of the application and invited them to respond. All three opposed the move, but Meade County commissioners invited officials to discuss the situation Wednesday in Sturgis. Victoria Wicks has more on their meeting.
Vernon Ike Schmidt is executive director of Rosebud's Tribal Land Enterprise. He told Meade County commissioners that he's optimistic about Bear Butte's possibilities.
Just like the other spiritual sites throughout the world that people go to see, like Jerusalem, and well, we have our Jerusalem right here. Once these other countries' people get to know the significance, they'll come and visit and feel the power of the mountain.
Losing the property taxes the tribe pays Meade County is not an issue, according to most of the commissioners. Linda Rausch says the tribe pays less than $4,000 a year, and if it would apply for nonprofit tax exemption, it wouldn't have to pay anything, regardless of trust status. She says the commissioner's formal position is to oppose the trust application, but they want more time to study data. Rausch says the invitation to meet with the tribe indicates good intentions.
We think we're open people that can get along with our neighbors, and we want to show that to the world, and so part of that was why we reached out.
Although the land in question is within original Fort Laramie Treaty boundaries, the tribe's Ike Schmidt says its distance from the Rosebud Reservation might be a problem.
So this is going to probably take the Secretary of Interior approval, for sure the Aberdeen Area Director. So it's not going to be an easy process, and it's not going to happen overnight, and this is just the first step.
The commissioners and tribal representatives agreed to meet again sometime in the future. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in South Dakota.
The former chairman of the Western Shoshone National Council is suing the Bureau of Land Management for $30 million over a grazing rights dispute. Willie Albright reports from Reno, Nevada.
10 years ago, the BLM seized 132 head of cattle belonging to Western Shoshone activist Raymond Yowell and sold them at auction. Then the agency sent Yowell a bill for $180,000 for penalties and unpaid grazing fees. The BLM says Yowell should have been paying grazing fees all along, but Yowell contends he was just exercising his treaty-granted rights to be a herdsman and that he doesn't owe the BLM anything. The BLM is garnishing 15% of Yowell's $900 a month Social Security check until the debt is paid. Yowell, now 81 years old, says he'll be dead long before then, but is fighting back anyway.
It's an injustice that's been done to me as an individual, let alone the West Shoshone right, because I'm not raising that at all. That individually, my constitutional rights have been violated, and the treaty has been breached, and the trust responsibility has been breached.
In his lawsuit, Yowell accuses the government of violating his right to due process, his civil rights, and his constitutional protections against unwarranted seizure of property. Yowell, who is representing himself, wants $10 million for each violation. He says the Ruby Valley Treaty of 1863 guarantees Shoshone sovereignty, but that the federal government has never honored that treaty. For National Native News, I'm Willie Albright in Reno, Nevada.
Thank you. During this week in 2006, hundreds of indigenous leaders gathered for the Summit of Nations at Bear Butte in South Dakota. They discussed a number of issues, including the protection of sacred sites, treaty rights, and the development of international peace agreements. Some attendees traveled to the event from South America. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. And our first guests are Jane Terry and Bumi Matsumoto, who have a show called Pathways at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center opening tomorrow night. Thank you very much for being in the station with me today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
So first of all, Pathways. Could you explain the title, please?
Well, did you see our Crossroads show 2 years ago at the Jack? Decided to go along that theme, and instead of Crossroads, we're taking similar but different paths. In our artwork, we're both using certain Japanese kirigami cutting, paper cutting techniques, but in different ways. And although Jane and I are still, you know, have a lot of art pieces that are collaborative and similar, we do have our differences, and that's sort of the pathways, right, Jane?
The pathways that brought us to this juncture. So beginning way back when I was back east and Fumi was on the west coast, and we followed similar but dissimilar paths, and it's kind of how a plant grows. It twines around, and so that's how our paths have grown.
Speaking of plants, you make the use of invasive plants in your paperwork.
Yes. Yes.
You say that I'm proud of that.
Definitely, yeah. Knotweed makes really Japanese knotweed, which people really are opposed to because it is an invasive plant. When you introduce it to a freshly exposed piece of ground, it will take over with a vengeance. But it can be harvested and turned into a really nice source of paper.
How do you make paper out of the knotweed?
You cut it up, take off the leaves, cook it with soda for a day or so. You chop it up in small pieces, and then you cook it for a day or so, and then you strain it out and rinse all the ash out, and then you put it through a grinder. This is my method. There are Hollander blenders that professionals use, but those are expensive, so I don't have that. So I put it through an old-fashioned grinder, and then I put it in a blender and whip it up so it breaks down the fiber, and then I use a screening process where you put the pulp in a water bath and you put the screen in and pull it up through the water bath with a frame around that. You pull the frame off and then you flip over the framed piece of really wet paper onto an absorbent surface and squeeze it out and dry it. And then you can... I dry it on glass because I like a nice smooth surface on one side, and other people approach the drying process differently, but that's how I do it.
It's not a quick process.
No. But, I mean, I'm very patient, so.
Yeah, and Jane makes just this beautiful paper out of iris leaves and spruce bark roots and cedar.
Yeah.
I was just saying to Jane, boy, you know, it's just so laborious and tedious. I mean, it can be fun, but I mean, I use tea bags that are recycled to print on. So if you come to the show, you can compare Jane's beautiful handmade paper and to my tea bags and recycled coffee filters.
Now, you don't drink that sort of blue coffee if you're using these recycled coffee filters.
Well, I stopped drinking coffee. I love coffee, but I had to stop for some health reasons. But I still drink a lot of green tea, and if you look at some of the pieces, the prints that I have, some are done on green tea bags, some are done on oh, what's the English breakfast, and Earl Grey, and Lady Grey, you know, some spiced teas. Anyway, each of the tea bags, the surface, if you just were, you know, not aware that they were recycled tea bags, you might just think they're rice paper or some fine, you know, printing paper. But, and I like the technique and the way that the block prints, you know, come out on them. So hopefully if people come down, they'll be able to appreciate that, you know, at least it's being recycled, and the knotweed, the invasive plant, is being recycled and used to a beautiful purpose.
Higher purpose.
You both use block prints to make your artwork as well.
Mm-hmm. I was using linoleum and wood block prints, and more of the old school way of doing it, where you ink up the block and then you put the paper on top of it. And Fumi's been using hers more like you'd use a stencil.
A stamp.
Stamp, I'm sorry. Right. Stamp.
Yeah, yes. like a block print, mm-hmm. but I cut out each individual image, and not like on one sheet, but multiple. And then I use the image, for instance, if I, you know, have halibut or salmon, whatever. Each image is one stamp, so they're multiples on one sheet of paper. Whereas Jane's been doing a block, and also Kitigami again. Back to Kitigami.
Right. The designs are based on that, where I cut out the stencils using Kitigami designs, basically, which can then be silk screened. They can be silk screened numerous times, so I could come up with T-shirts that have designs on, theoretically. But I've been working with the paper. But you can just imagine something that's being duplicated over and over.
Well, we were talking about Kitigami. Some people have heard it as Kirigami, which is the anglicized way of saying it. But Kitigami is the art of paper cutting. Kiri means to cut, and gami or kami means paper in Japanese. Not like origami, which means to fold. Ori means to fold. But you cut the paper. And the salmon, I made a bunch of red salmon out of blotter paper that I dyed and ironed and individually cut designs into and shaped into sculptures. And I also have some white blotter paper that I made into hanging fish that look like fish bones. So that's also a Kitigami process, which is entirely a different way than what Jane's used by cutting her image and then using it as a silkscreen stencil. So it'll be interesting for people to come and compare, like I said, pathways. We're taking, you know, diverging paths, but starting from a similar technique.
Talking with Jane Terry and Fumi Matsumoto about their show Pathways, which opens tomorrow at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. I just got a preview of it, and immediately when you walk into the room, you're overwhelmed by a kimono that's made entirely out of close to 1,000 coffee filters.
Hand-dyed.
I want to describe your process, if you could, please, Fumi.
Well, first you get your coffee filter and fold it in half and fold it again and a bunch of times till you have a little squished up coffee filter, and you dip it in dye. And then I dip it in water to have the different strengths of dye going into the coffee filter itself and make a pattern. After it's dry and you open them up, it looks just like a morning glory. I used I call it heavenly blue because of the color. I mix some turquoise and navy blue to get this really nice morning glory color. And after gluing it with many dozens of glue sticks, I had to put it on a backing and make a lining, and I cut it and sewed it like a regular kimono. So you see the sleeves and the pattern of the coffee filter going from dark to light on the sleeves and then going back dark again, and with a really nice, very dark collar. It's pretty striking, and it's hanging there. If you were here 2 years ago for our Crossroads show, I had a recycled teabag kimono, but I have to say that this coffee filter one took a lot more time and effort, and I can't disappoint my coffee-drinking friends. So,
is this going to be one of the wearable art pieces, perhaps?
Well, I don't know. Hopefully someone will buy it and maybe they'll want to wear it. But no, it's actually pretty fragile. It's paper.
Want to talk about your geisha boxes?
Oh, my geisha boxes, yeah. I have four shadow boxes that I put various little geishas in there from old National Geographic photos, probably pre, you know, around Edo period or pre-war, definitely. And these geishas are doing southeastern kind of things, like pulling up crab pots and admiring large halibut and having a crab fest, fly fishing on the rocks there. And it's pretty interesting. I tried to think about things that, you know, that I would like to do. And but maybe I doubt if they were fly fishing back in, you know, in Japan in those days. But those are, you know, those are some of the images that I have, and I kind of like those. So if you come, I think you'll enjoy the shadow boxes.
It's got a great sense of humor.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Fumi Matsumoto and Jane Terry about their show Pathways, opening up tomorrow night at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. They're kind of mum on what they're going to be serving for food right now. So do you have any hints?
Well, there'll be food, you know, the out in the hall, you know, in the reception area. I don't know exactly what, because I think Kari and Nancy, the other people, are preparing it this time. We're probably going to be, you know, working on putting up the show, so I doubt if we'll be cooking sushi or anything. Well, you can enjoy the crab pots, the geisha's enjoying the crab fest, yeah, in my shadow boxes. Look at all the food in that, so.
And Fumi and Jane, thank you very much for coming down the station. Tomorrow your show opens up at 4:30 and goes till about 6:30 or so. Again, thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jeff.
That bean of caffeine.
Caffeine
makes you happy.
Caffeine
certainly does get you high.
Caffeine
is bound to make you snappy. You know, I know you know what I mean. When I wake up in the morning, whoa, there's only one thing I want to do. This to get that water boiling. I whip up a mess of brew.
That's so fine.
You hear those beans grind. So fine what coffee can do. It's so,
so fine.
If it's the richest kind. Mrs. Olson, I'm indebted to you.
Caffeine.
Now what makes you happy?
Caffeine.
Steadily just get you high.
Caffeine.
It's bound to make you snappy. You know I. Coffee Connection in Harvard Square, just to score myself a few beans. I was after perfection. It was a coffee lover's dream. I want a real strong, not too bitter. It's gotta last long and see me through. I want a real strong, but I don't want the jitters. I got to be high and cool. Now it makes you happy.
Caffeine.
It certainly does get you high.
Caffeine
is bound to make you snappy. You know, I know you know what I mean, little soy. Well, I love my cappuccino. I dig the way it makes me feel.
Midnight time,
when the day is over and I'm tired of the work and grind, I put some coffee in my liquor, make it a little thicker. Joy to the coffee achiever's mind.
Caffeine,
now it makes you happy.
Caffeine,
certainly does get you high.
Caffeine,
caffeine is bound to make you snappy. You know, I know you know what I mean. Is that old
caffeine?
Caffeine. You know that it's supreme.
Caffeine.
Got to have my coffee. I turn to me. you know I'm a fiend for that bean of caffeine. I'll take another cup.
Patty Larkin, the time is 3:20 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Tasha Whalen and Lenka Farabee. They've been doing glass art for a number of years together. Now they've been selected as the featured artists for the Juneau Arts and the Juneau Artist Gallery for the month of August. Tasha and Lincoln, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Thanks for having
us,
Jeff.
Jeff.
So how did you get selected to be the featured artist? Was it kind of a surprise, or did they just let you know?
we volunteer,
yeah,
actually.
Anytime we can get it down there and get our name out and our pieces out for people to come down and see, it's really exciting for us.
Yeah, we always try to feature an artist at the co-op every month. It's a great way to encourage people to bring out new work, and then also a great way to encourage the community to come down and see what's new at the artist co-op.
You've been doing glass, lamp work in glass for a long time, and then fusion glass together, and now what are you working on this time?
Go for it.
Well, we have for, on top of the glass, I have some new photographs that I am showing down there this month. The photography is, it's a digital photography, and it's called HDR, High Dynamic Range Photographs, and it involves a computer. It's where you're using different exposures of the same photograph and stacking them and manipulating them, and it gives you kind of a hyper-real or surreal effect and look. And so I've been trying to do some mostly landscape photographs, and I just am kind of fascinated with the process, and I had all these photos stacked up on our computer, and there was a vacancy at the artist gallery, so I had those pieces juried in, and now they're up for people to come down and view and see. Along with that, I have an old camera that I kind of manipulated and messed with and tinkered with in my spare time and made it an infrared camera. So I have some of those infrared photographs down there for viewing as well.
So with photographs, do you take 6 different exposures or 7 different exposures, or do you just take one print and then work it with that with a computer in different ways?
It's multiple exposures. At the minimum, I use 3. At the maximum, maybe 9. And it just depends on the, you know, if it's one of those really bright, sunny days and what you're taking a photograph of has a lot of dark shadows and whatnot, that requires a little bit more exposures. But on a cloudier, rainier day, you don't need quite as many.
Is it a long process as far as waiting for the computer to do its thing?
Yeah, it can be.
I would say it is. I always am waiting in line behind whatever he's doing.
It can take a long time. The hard part is I have a lot of things, other priorities, and so they kind of just sit on the camera until I can sit down on some afternoon that I don't have something else to do over a cup of coffee and manipulate and mess with the photographs. But it's always, once I start that process, it's very exciting to see the finished results, and I'll run down and show them to Tasha, and it's kind of, you know, like a big surprise.
When you say landscapes, what do you mean by landscapes?
Just different landscape as opposed to like portrait photographs. So mostly wide angle pictures, looking at different scenes in town that I just don't see. We live over in Douglas, and so I'm pretty much fascinated with Sandy Beach and all of the old Treadwell relics. And so I go down there a lot, and I do a lot of photographs of that part of town. Also, the out at Mendenhall, you know, that's a pretty interesting and fascinating place as well. So the landscapes are mostly static scenes where you don't have a lot of action or things moving because of the requirement of taking multiple exposures. It needs to be kind of a static, stationary object.
And you have to have a very rock solid tripod, I imagine.
Yes, yeah, you do. And I actually added extra weight to mine so it doesn't move around too much.
And how many prints are you going to be showing, and about what size are they?
I have 3 different sizes. For the primary ones, 3 different sizes down there. I have them, and they're all matted, 8x10, 11x14, and 13x19. And I have about 25 different prints, and they'll be shown. I also have a large panoramic photograph that I've taken as well on a New Year's Day out at Eagle Beach, and that'll be down there as well.
Yeah, that's stunning. I've really been enjoying seeing Lincoln's new work. It's really different. And it's just like a different perspective of Juneau. It captures the sort of the dark scenes really nicely, and the rain, and it's stunning. I mean, I get to say that, but I'm a little biased. But it's been fun to watch it evolve over the last couple of years.
And as a featured artist, I imagine you've had to come up with several new pieces of work.
Yeah, I focused on some new tiles, a series of they're steel blue tiles with black paint on them, or black enamel glass paint on them, and they're typically all the scenes have some sort of tree or raven, which is a sort of reoccurring theme in a lot of my work. And they also capture the darkness of Juno, I think. but it's a great process, and the glass it's a very specific glass that I use that's just really exciting to work with because it actually changes colors in the kiln and turns up kind of a metallic steel color. It's stunning, and those will be up. And then we have some new jewelry designs that are out. We'll have those up. So Lincoln's photography got juried in maybe a month ago, 2 months ago. So it's relatively new. I don't think that a lot of people don't even know he's selling his photography. So we're really going to feature that. And so we'll have loads of stuff. And we also have our food table out, you know. So it'll be a good night.
It's coming up this Friday at the Juno Artist Gallery, which is in the Senate Building on the first floor there.
Yes. Yeah, 4:30 to 7. And we're usually there after 7 even, so.
And what kind of food are you serving?
Well, cheese, probably.
Lots of cheese, usually.
We always say cheese. And actually, I love this little donut shack that's next to Western Auto. I don't know if you've had the donuts out there yet, but they're amazing. So it's my new thing. And I ordered a bunch of little mini donuts. So I think the stand is called Cucamonga. People need to stop by.
It's very good.
It is amazing. And they only have a couple days a week that they're open. So I go stop by there on the way to the new studio space. And anyways, we'll have donuts and cheese.
How's the new studio space doing?
It's amazing. Oh, it's been, it took a while to get everything set up. And we have another artist moving in. Phoebe Robacher is moving in next month in the loft. And I got some light tables out at Surplus. And it's just been so fun. And I'm really, there's stuff everywhere because I've got all these different projects going on. And I have somebody assisting me, and it's just been amazing, very, very productive. So exactly what I wanted.
And the best way to direct people to get there?
Right across from the brewery.
On Shawn Drive there, yeah, right next to the brewery.
Yeah, we're going to, hopefully our goal is to have some set hours so that people in the community can stop by and see the gallery space. There's always things for sale. But they can also come in and check out the studio. And the goal is to do, because I also teach at the Canvas, off days would be our studio days would be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and about 11 to 5 on those days. We'll have everything posted.
Is there a phone number?
My studio cell number is 209-2600, and they can call me on there and catch me wherever I'm at if they have questions. Also, I will post them on our website, which is basementstudiosalaska.com.
Tasha Whalen and Lincoln Ferbey, thank you for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thanks,
Jeff. Great.
This
thank
is like the
much,
third
Jeff.
Time I've seen you in a couple of months, so thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 4th of August, 2011. It's the anniversary of the first edition of the Saturday Evening Post, 1821. It originated as the Pennsylvania Gazette, which was owned and run by Benjamin Franklin. But in 1821, the Gazette changed hands and was renamed. It was a rather political newspaper until 1898. It was bought by Cyrus Curtis, the publisher of the Ladies' Home Journal, who redesigned the newspaper to make it a magazine and took great care with its illustrations. It was in 1916, a 22-year-old painter from New York showed his paintings to the editor of the Post, and they bought two of them to use as covers. One was a picture of a boy with a baby bottle shoved in his pocket, pushing a baby carriage and being teased by other boys who were off to play baseball. It was the first Saturday Evening Post cover by Norman Rockwell, who went on to do more than 300 more of them. William Faulkner published in The Post, Louis L'Amour, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Vonnegut, Robert Heinlein, P.G. Woodhouse, J.D. Salinger. Readership started to decline in the 50s and the 60s. Conservative politics, old-fashioned values of the Saturday Evening Post put it outside the mainstream. It ceased publication in 1969, but it has come back as a nonprofit, publishing 6 issues a year, and is mainly out to teach the fundamentals of good health. It was on this day in the year 1181, Chinese and Japanese astronomers recorded the appearance of a supernova, what they called a guest star. It was one of the 3 most brilliant objects in the sky. It remained visible for 6 months and then disappeared. To Western astronomers, the supernova was a part of the constellation Cassiopeia, named for the arrogant wife of the king of Ethiopia, who bragged that she and her daughter Andromeda were more beautiful than the sea nymphs, which enraged the sea god Poseidon, who chained Cassiopeia to her throne in the heavens, hanging upside down. More recently, NASA launched its Chandra X-ray Observatory, which gave astronomers their first good picture of the remnants of that supernova of 1181, which we call 3C58, an oval of matter glowing with X-rays and radio waves 10,000 light-years away, with a rapidly spinning neutron star blowing out jets of particles at near the speed of light. Here's a poem for today by Jack Prelutsky. Be glad your nose is on your face. Be glad your nose is on your face, not pasted on some other place. For if it were where it is not, you might dislike your nose a lot. Imagine if your precious nose were sandwiched in between your toes. That clearly would not be a treat, for you'd be forced to smell your feet. Your nose would be a source of dread were it attached atop your head. It soon would drive you to despair, forever tickled by your hair. Within your ear, your nose would be an absolute catastrophe, for when you were obliged to sneeze, your brain would rattle from the breeze. Your nose, instead, through thick and thin, remains between your eyes and chin, not pasted on some other place. Be glad your nose is on your face. A poem by Jack Prelutsky from his collection Be Glad Your Nose Is On Your Face and Other Poems, published by HarperCollins and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly editor's podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:33 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Mitch Watley. He's an artist. He has a show opening up at the Ruby Room in the Emporium Mall area from 4:30 to 7:30 on Friday. Mitch, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having me.
So how would you describe your work and where do you get inspired from?
A lot of it is based on color. I really like working with colors. I like putting human beings in my work, some kind of human element. The frontier kind of environments. I paint a lot of things that are in space or Alaskan stuff. I'm from Texas originally, so back when that was a frontier, a lot of those stories came down to me through my family, and that inspired me, you know, family history, that area.
And robots.
And robots, yes.
What about robots appeals to you?
That you can kind of overlay your own humanity over them somehow, like they're kind of a blank template, mm-hmm. ready to be, to have personality uploaded into them, I guess.
When you use acrylics, why do you choose acrylics?
I live in an apartment. I work out of my apartment, so they're easiest to clean up. They don't have a whole lot of smell. They dry quickly. They clean up with soap and water.
You said the great smaller state of Texas. And where did you get your inspiration from?
From Texas, you mean?
Besides Texas.
Besides Texas.
Maybe what other artists?
Lots of film, comic books. I used to draw a lot of comic books and cartoons. That was my main source of imagination, inspiration when I was growing up. I got in trouble several times in school when I should have been taking notes. I was drawing all kinds of comic book characters and funny cartoons of the teacher, that sort of thing.
Stan Lee was an early inspiration then.
Yes.
You also use people from outer space.
Yes. I like the colors that you find in outer space, like some of the Hubble images, just the amazing colors that are out there kind of give you the option to use colors that we don't see every day here on Earth. That sort of thing.
What's your process of producing art? Do you come up with a pencil design first and then just lay it out in acrylics, or do you just start with acrylics?
I have several binders of images. I'll see something in a magazine or online that inspire me, and I'll hold on to that and put it in a binder and kind of use elements from that and kind of piece the things that I like about it together to tell the story on the canvas and kind of put it together in a way. I usually use Photoshop. I don't really sketch with pencil anymore. I'll just take the elements that I like, kind of scoot them around, throw them together in different layers, and I usually have my laptop next to me when I'm working, when my laptop is working, that is, and I'll kind of use those as references. You can move things around. It's always very fluid when you work in Photoshop, so if you're working on the painting and you realize this is not happening, you can go over to your sketch and rearrange your sketch, and you don't have to use any more paper. You don't have to do anything like that because it's all just digital.
Cool. So then you do an acrylic work from the digital.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you work better in the morning or in the evening or afternoon?
I would say evening into late at night. I've been known to stay up pretty late working on paintings and then drag myself to work at 8 a.m.
When the inspiration,
in spite of everything.
When the inspiration calls.
Yeah, exactly.
About how many pieces are in the show?
I'd say probably about 20 to 25 pieces. Some are small, some are pretty large.
What do you want the viewer to take home from your work when they're looking at it?
I want them to take home a story. Maybe not the story that I am really telling or I was thinking of when I painted it. I like to leave it a little bit open, so that whenever they look at it and they maybe read the title of the work, then they can kind of go from there and take something else that from their own experience based on adding up the title with the image. They can kind of fill in the gaps, and they've got their own version of it, really, at the end of the day.
I guess one of the pieces that I saw is a very lonely-looking alien sitting on the edge of his flying saucer. Is that the same story you come up with, or do you...
Yeah, something like that. It's actually a female. The title of that piece is "By the Time I Got There, You Were Gone." And I'm not exactly sure where that came from or what it means, but, traveling in space, they tell us it takes a long time. That's what the scientists tell us. Television says it doesn't take that long, but... she traveled a long way to get there for some reason or another, and it was too late by the time she got there, whatever that reason is.
Do you find yourself working in large scale or small scale?
Actually, that leads me into wanting to mention another project that's going on for one day only tomorrow in Pocket Park, also known as, I'm not sure I can pronounce it correctly, but it's the park on Front and Franklin. We're going to have some artwork there. A bunch of friends and I put together some really large canvases, and everybody just kind of did their own thing, and we're going to assemble it and show it and see what people think. And when I was working on that one, it's 4 feet by 8 feet. It's the biggest thing I'd ever worked on. I realized it's nice on one hand because you don't have to make as many tiny brush strokes. On the other hand, it takes a lot of paint. So I kind of like a good medium size. Sometimes the small ones, they go really quickly, but then it leaves you feeling a little less than satisfied once you get to the end product.
Do you like working in detail?
Sometimes. I think as I'm getting older, I'm trying to push myself to less tight and detailed work, stuff that's more looser, more suggests the imagery than actually spells it out, because I think people respond when there's less detail, they'll respond to it more.
I've been talking to Mitch Wiley, who's got a show opening up at the Ruby Room this Friday from 4:30 until 7:30, featuring outer space, robots, people in various positions, and more. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Not that I can think of. I think everybody should come out and check things out. It's going to be a good weekend for art.
And the question is, what are you serving for food?
I am not exactly certain. I believe we're having some beverages. We will also have some snacks, cheese, crackers, those sorts of things. Something fancy, I'm sure.
All right, Mitch, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Fitzgerald. Time is 3:44. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau.
Our series On Location takes us to Mansfield, Ohio, where The Shawshank Redemption was filmed.
It's almost like a cult following here. We get phone calls, we get visitations.
He created a Shawshank witch.
This is the Shawshank Bundt Cake.
A love story between a Rust Belt town and a beloved movie, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Coming your way at 4 here, Clock on Listener Supported KTOO.
Here If I were an apple, I'd be very unhappy traveling 4,000 miles or more. From far off Tasmania, in a shipping container, to a shelf in a New Jersey store. Why should I be tortured when some New Jersey orchard would be totally thrilled to the core? To pick me and crate me and load me and freight me, not 4,000 miles, but 4. An apple should be not far from the tree where it ripens in the fall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. If I were a berry, I expect I'd be very contrary and hardly inclined to get shipped out from Chile to a store in North Philly. Hey, I'd have to be out of my mind. It seems paradoxic in carbon dioxide that we force all our food to commute, wasting gallons of fuel, which we know isn't cool for people or planets or fruit. A berry is fine, not far from its vine, near the farmer's market stall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Yeah. Of the fruit you might want to take home. Do not buy for your table till you check out the label and determine how far it did roam. Aside from the karma of helping the farmer who lives in your county or state, there is one more good reason to buy what's in season. The taste is incredibly great. So keep buying foods from regional dudes. Keep your carbon footprint small. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Good, good, good for us all.
Tom Chapin.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Time is 3:48, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juno here on a Juno afternoon. And in the studio with me now is Nancy DeTourney from the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, here to talk about things going up with the art world.
Bring your umbrella. It's a little damp out there today.
No, nobody in Juno really uses umbrellas, do they?
I do. Yeah.
Should have used it today with your notes.
I should have. My notes are all soggy, so let's hope I can read them. All right. So, let's see. Starting out this evening, you could take Marimba classes, or you could take adult wheel ceramics classes over at the Canvas. That starts at 7. If you're a beginning Marimba, at 6 o'clock if you're a beginning Marimba person. If you're an intermediate Marimba person, you can take that at 7:15. Nickelodeon's showing The Perfect Host. Now, tomorrow, of course, is First Friday, which is why it's raining really hard today, so that tomorrow it's gorgeous. The organ concert at noon is J. Allen McKinnon. And in the afternoon, somewhere downtown at a location near you, there will be sort of a guerrilla art exhibit sort of preceding the First Friday event. So plan to be downtown around 3, 3:30, something like that. The gallery openings of this month, and it's summer, but boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to go around and look at. We have Fumi Matsumoto and Jane Terry hanging things over in our gallery right now. Their collection is called Pathways, and it's really amazing. It's
It's just amazing is all I have to say so far. So stop in at the Arts Council, get your little booklet so you know where to go, your little flyer. Mitch did this at the Ruby Room, which is on South Franklin, between Heritage and Goldtown, in the middle of their section there where Lucid Reverie is. It's JB's first show. He's at Paradise Cafe. The Juno Artist Gallery has the basement studios. That's Tasha Whalen and
Lincoln Fairby.
Lincoln Fairby, yeah. And they're doing glass, tiles, and photography. Lincoln's doing photography. At the Gallery of the North, heading back up South Franklin Street, it's new stuff by Mel Matlian. And then go on up to the Baranoff. The Plain Rain folks will be showing the stuff that they've been doing this summer. They had Kes Woodward down here. They did a workshop with him in June. And I think these are all the things, or a lot of the things that resulted from that workshop. And I had a little sneak preview of some of them, and it's fabulous. So, and I believe they're having a wine tasting at that place one too. And then up around the corner by the Observatory Bookstore, and around the corner at the Bentwood and Bead Gallery, there's new works by Sue Kraft, Sheila Alexandrovich, and Jim and Salty Haynes. But the exciting news is that Salty is she's putting all of her collection of antique beaded bags up for sale.
Wow.
You don't look excited.
I'm stunned because I've seen some of these bags before.
They're fabulous bags, and I guess she's just decided that it's time to let them go on their way. She has a beautiful collection, even if you just want to go and look at it. So that's up on 3rd Street, just across the street from the bank up there and by the Observatory Bookstore. Charity Green and Brandon Hauser are at the Heritage 2nd Street. Ryan Cortez Perez is at the Canvas with Musica, Madera y Movimiento. I think it's wooden carvings and instruments and large-scale photography is what I've heard. That's at the Canvas. Wander down the hill from there. Then at the Rookery, as you continue down Seward Street, they have Kenneth Mariarty, Photography Untold Stories, and also there's Open Mic. And then get down to Front Street, Annie Kales is having a Salute to the Salmon Derby. Everything that's salmon-related is 10% off, and apparently if you come dressed as a salmon, something special will happen.
People will avoid you because they think you're spawning.
Yes, stay downwind, please. But anyway, that sounds like fun downtown for the first Friday. And like I said, try to be down there a little early because I think there's some stuff happening. Also, out at the university, it is between 4:30 and I think 5:30, it's the Ockman Triathlon Entrant Info Meeting. If you're going to enter the triathlon on Saturday morning, you need to go to this informational meeting. It's out at the university in the lower parking lot. If you need more information, it's TracyRivera0@gmail.com. At 5:30, Tom Locher and Wayne Norlin are up at the Timberline Grill at the Mount Roberts Tram. 6 o'clock, Dan Hobson's classical guitar in the Gold Room at the Baranoff. We have concerts in the park, and it's a really great lineup. That starts at 7 o'clock. Flutatious, which is Sandy Fortier and several young flutists, the Hillbilly Honeys, and Hen House. And if it's raining, which we really don't want it to do, but if it is, then the rain venue will be at the Jack.
We're going to have the Hillbilly Sunday Honeys on the radio here tomorrow at 3:45.
Excellent. You know, I think it's a really brilliant lineup. I'm excited about that one. Also at 7 o'clock, the Goldtown Show and the Perfect Toast. At 9:30, it's Smokin' Fish down at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. This is a homegrown movie.
It is a great movie.
It's a great movie. Everybody that has been to see it. Did you go to see it for its opening?
I saw it. It was a preview, so I could interview.
Okay. You got a preview of the preview. Excellent. And anyway, so that's at 9:30, also at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. You could also go over to the Rendezvous and sit in with the band with Jason Caputo. And Deering and Down are at the Alaskan Bar. So great night, Friday night.
Can you go to sit in with the band even though you don't want to sit in with the band?
Yeah, you can do that.
You just listen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You can just sit in and have a Coke or Coca-Cola or, you know, just whatever you want to do there. It's okay with me. I'm sure they'd be happy to have you. On Saturday morning at 7 a.m., so don't stay out too late when you're sitting in with the band. The Auckman Triathlon starts at the Auck Lake Wayside. This is an event that's being sponsored by the Southeast Roadrunners and a whole bunch of other folks. There is no registration the day of. So like I said, if you want to participate in this event, you need to do that Friday afternoon. You start at the Auck Lake boat ramp. You need to have a wetsuit. There's going to be swimming and biking and running and all sorts of exercise. At 10 o'clock, the Canvas parking lot on 3rd and Franklin Street. Bring your tots, who are between the ages of 2 and 6, in their clothes that you don't mind that they get messy. I don't know what other kind of clothes kids have, but it's the Tots Arts in Motion in the parking lot at the Canvas. It's a free event. Lots of fun for kids and their families, so come there. Now, you want to talk about what's happening at 11?
It's going to be a magic show and a flea circus exhibition at the downtown library at 11 o'clock.
All righty, then. Who's doing that?
Some guy named Jeff Brown, but he doesn't want to talk about it because we have just a couple more minutes to go before
okay,
we get
well,
into the news.
All right, and then at 2 o'clock, Disney's Beauty and the Beast is performed by Perseverance Theater out at the Noyes Pavilion. This, you have 2 weekends to see the star performances. They're doing James and the Giant Peach, and they're doing the Disney's Beauty and the Beast. And it starts this weekend at 2. Go to the Perseverance website to get their total schedule. The James and the Giant Peach is on Saturday at 7:30. Let's see what else we need to make sure we're going to see. There's a cultural dances. I Am Juno, the Juno Human Rights Commission, is doing this over at the Jack at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Folks from all different types of backgrounds in Juno will be performing different dances. They did this last year. It was lots of fun. We have the Sunday Market from noon to 3. We have James and the Giant Peach at 2 out at the Noyes Pavilion. At 4, it's a Sunday at Savico. We have Juliana Bibb, the Oompa Band, and Shona Strasser and Riley Woodford. This is a bring-your-own lawn chair sort of situation, and we're really hoping for a clear day because we don't have a rain venue for this one. Well, if it is raining, check the website. We'll get to it. Let's see what else we got going on. It's been sort of a busy week, actually. Starting on next Monday, there is an Explorers Club that the Juneau City Museum is doing for kids ages 8 to 11. Monday will be gold panning. The next day they're visiting the Treadwell. They're going to go see the hats exhibit. They'll be doing some carving. They're going to go out to the glacier. You can sign up for the whole week or just for the day that you're interested in. So call the city for more information about that. There's swing dance lessons on Tuesday. Rejoice and Shouts, the movie that they're showing at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Let me see. Austin Osterhout is at the Alaskan on Wednesday night. And that kind of sums it up. First Friday takes it away.
Check out the website at jhc.org for more information on that. Nancy, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
You are tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay Area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Davis listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sirshoona at 91.9. An excursion inlet and icy straight here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Charlotte Fox, outgoing executive director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Dana White will be here to highlight next week's invasive plants workshop, and we'll also talk with members of the Hillbilly Honeys on the roster for tomorrow night's concert in the park. That Writer's Almanac music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, patchy fog, rain, low temperatures around 51 degrees, east winds to 10 miles per hour. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with areas of fog in the morning and scattered showers, high temperatures around 58 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies expected on Friday night with a chance of showers. Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Sunday looks like mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 61 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. If you'd like to be on the show or know someone that should be, please give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. My phone number is 463-6425. Thanks for tuning in and have a great evening.